This is Chief Conti of the Metropolitan Police Department, and I'm asking for your help. We all must avoid using our cell phones while driving, as lives are increasingly at risk with this behavior. So much can happen when you are distracted by a phone, and the results could be deadly. Help us make Vision Zero a reality by keeping your eyes on the street. MPD is enforcing the district's hands-free distracted driving laws. One text or call can wreck it all.
Leftovers or the DMV
number 97
or house cleaning or Chumba Casino always brings the fun. Play over 100 different games online for free from anywhere. You could redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. Live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
That long ball is going to go for a touchdown. The game's over. Webster Slaughter.
Metcalf, what a goal. What a score. Unbelievable.
45-40. Run, William, run. He's got blockers in front. Five. Touchdown. Joshua Cribbs turns disaster into a score.
Sight wants it all on this one for Logan, and he is there.
Jim Brown with a 30. Jim Brown is going to go in for another touchdown.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
Wow.
It is Baker Mayfield.
I woke up feeling dangerous.
Hello, Cleveland. Welcome to another episode of the 1085 Gridiron Podcast. I am your host, Anthony Adjoki. Happy New Year to everybody listening out there. As always, I got Jack with me in the co-host position. How are you doing today, Jack?
Doing well, man. Happy New Year to you and your family, and Happy New Year to all our listeners. We hope 2020 is going to be a good year, not just for the podcast and our site, but also for the Browns. Anthony, how was your New Year's?
It was pretty good. I mean, I did work today, but it wasn't exactly busy at work. So, you know, now I get to relax a little bit, talk some football, which, you know, we always enjoy doing. That's why we have this podcast and we have our website. So, last time we talked about Freddie Kitchens getting fired after the game on Sunday. But lo and behold, Jack, the news didn't stop there with Freddie Kitchens leaving the organization. Now John Dorsey has left the organization, the team, and John Dorsey have mutually decided to part ways, which is the terminology that they used. Supposedly, they wanted John to take a lesser role in the organization and not be the GM anymore. What's your opinion of that? And then the way Dorsey left, what do you think his lasting legacy with the Browns is?
I mean, it's no surprise that Dorsey ended up leaving. I mean, we talked about it Sunday night that there was a potential restructuring of the organization that was going to take place. And, there was inklings that Dorsey could be on his way out. And then as, you know, Tuesday unfolded, there was more reports that they were heading towards this and then it actually happened. The way Dorsey's left, like I said, it doesn't surprise me. You read the reports and it says that the Haslams wanted to restructure the organization and they essentially wanted to hire someone to oversee the football operations because they didn't feel like Dorsey was doing a good job, but they wanted to keep him around because he's a solid talent evaluator. But I mean, it's clear that Dorsey was not going to let someone take the power that he possessed away. That's why he ended up leaving Kansas City, because Andy Reid was garnering more power and Dorsey didn't like that. So obviously those sides split, and now the same situation happened in Cleveland. My overall take on his legacy, I think Dorsey did some good things here. He drafted Baker Mayfield, who the majority of us still believes is the long-term answer at the quarterback position. He also drafted, you know, Denzel Ward. He drafted Nick Chubb. He's added guys like Greedy Williams, guys like Mac Wilson that you hope are part of the long-term core here. He also added guys like Jarvis Landry, Sheldon Richardson. You know, some of those are some of the key guys that he brought in. But you also look, he made some bad moves. He drafted Austin Corbett at the top of the second round back in 2018. He took chance on character guys like Antonio Callaway and Kareem Hunt, which Kareem Hunt's been good since he got to Cleveland, so I don't hold that against him. You know, trading guys like Jannard Avery away because they didn't fit what Wilkes was doing on defense, and it soured Avery's time here. He may have been playing a role in what was going on with Higgins, Njoku. But the biggest strike on him was hiring Freddie Kitchens. I mean, when you had guys like Mike McCarthy and reportedly Josh McDaniels wanting the job here last year, and Dorsey didn't want to do it because he didn't want to lose his power. And then there's reports coming out that said that, you know, Dorsey wanted to bring him back for a second year. Now, I've heard different reports that said that he signed off on them firing Freddie Sunday night, but we don't really know the truth to that. Dorsey did some good things, but he did some bad things. And I truly think that in the long term, we're going to be okay. You know, the Haslams are here and they're power hungry and they change things around instantly. But I think Dorsey obviously left this team in a better spot. But I also think that, you know, there is mistakes that the next GM and the next head coach are going to have to clean up.
Yeah, there were a lot of moves that he made that you would consider flashy, right? You know, trading for Odell Beckham, trading for Jarvis Landry, signing Kareem Hunt. I don't know if that's flashy, but it's certainly eye-popping as a move. Drafting Baker Mayfield number one overall. Certainly wasn't going against the grain. But when you look at all those flashy moves that he made, Jack, there were the core parts of this team that needed addressing that he did not address. And what I'm mainly talking about is the offensive line is by far the biggest missed opportunity, I think. He decided to go with the hot hand after Greg Robinson and Chris Hubbard played okay last season during that second half, but not really investing into that spot going into this past season. Things could have been a lot different if there was better talent at those two positions, I feel. But you hit the nail on the head with the Freddie Kitchens hire. That was a downfall. You know, the reports are that he wanted to bring him back for a second year. Obviously, you know, that didn't happen, and now Dorsey is gone too. So when you look at this entire thing, you know, they decided to go with the hot hand, bring him back Freddie, who had really good success with Baker in the second half of after last season, especially after firing a coach who was 3-36-1 before, you know, Greg Williams took over and then Freddie was the interim offensive coordinator. You know, they decided to roll with the hot hand, Jack, and it ultimately got cold, and that's why nobody is here in terms of Freddie Kitchens or John Dorsey at this point.
Yeah, I mean, first, when you talked about the flashy moves, he definitely did that, but he went for just the talent, and he didn't build the proper football team. I mean, we did get Odell Beckham, but you gave up some key pieces, guys that were successful down the stretch last year, guys like Breshad Perriman, who we lost in the wide receiver room, Jabril Peppers, who definitely would have helped back in the back end of the defense in the secondary, and then Kevin Zeitler, who was one of the best interior offensive linemen in the league. And that hurt us this year because we had to rotate, you know, Eric Cush and Wyatt Teller there. The offensive line he barely addressed during his 2 years here. I mentioned the Corbett pick, but, you know, overpaying Chris Hubbard, trying to patch the left tackle position after Joe Thomas's retirement. But yeah, you went back right to the Freddie Kitchens move. He went with the hot hand, but he also did that with the mindset that he was still going to maintain his control and his power as the general manager. Like I said, McCarthy and McDaniels were there for the taking last year, and he chose to go with Kitchens because he knew that he would not have to relinquish any power, much like he had to in Kansas City working alongside Andy Reid. So, you know, we all knew about what we were getting with John Dorsey. We had heard the reports in Kansas City that he was a poor communicator, poor with management. And, you know, there were inklings here that he was poor with those type of things in Cleveland. I go back and recall Hard Knocks. Who was the guy that was announcing the roster cuts to the players? It was Elliott Wolf. It wasn't John Dorsey. And then, you know, some of the moves he made this year, you know, cutting Chris Smith, who was having a difficult year after the tragedy of losing his girlfriend, like, and then all the other stuff, like, he's the one that told Greg Robinson he was getting benched. I have to think he may have played a role with the Higgins and Njoku situations. I mean, regardless of the talent he brought in, you know, John Dorsey may not have been cut out to be a general manager. Maybe he's just cut out to be like a player personnel guy. I mean, it's kind of looking that way. And honestly, I don't fault the Browns wanting to restructure things because he focused more on talent, but didn't look at the overall aspects of a football player in terms of character and building the proper football team.
You can almost equate this, Jack, as, you know, I hate to use Madden as a comparison here, right? But, you know, you have your franchise in Madden or even the card system that they have, and you just try to acquire the best talent for said position, and you can magically make those players in the video game work all together and it'd be perfectly fine. Doing that to a locker room is a completely different story. And when you bring in, you know, all the talent that they did, not all of it is going to fit together in terms of locker room presence, leadership, all those different kinds of aspects. And I think that's where he failed the most, is not being able to judge how everything that he brought in together would work as a cohesive unit. And that started with him hiring Freddie Kitchens as a head coach.
Yeah, it's definitely like playing Madden, essentially. Like, you build the team based on ratings. Like, you try to stack up the positions to the best of your ability. You don't have to worry about character on there. But, like, this isn't a video game. This is real life. Like, you have to take into consideration, are these guys good fits in the locker room? Are they going to be distractions? Are they the right fit for what my coaching staff is trying to do on offense or defense? I mean, at times, Dorsey did not do that here. He just was focused on talent acquisition. And while it was flashy and it got the headlines and got us fired up, at the end of the day, they weren't the best moves to turn the Browns into a contender. And I'm sure Dorsey will sit back and acknowledge that. And, you know, if he ever gives an opportunity to be a GM again, you would hope he'd learn from his mistakes. But it seems like he took what he did at Kansas City and kind of made it bigger in Cleveland, and it just didn't lead to as much success as we had hoped. It turned out to be more success than we had in the previous regime, but it still wasn't enough because we had such high expectations and they kind of faltered. And while most of that went on Freddie Kitchens and the coaching staff, John Dorsey had a lot to do with why the Browns weren't as successful as we thought they would be in 2019.
You know what I will not be engaging in, Jack, is if the Browns bounce back and go 9-7, go 10-6, make the playoffs, whatever. I will not be engaging in any kind of Dorsey wars, just like we dealt and are still dealing with at some cases the Sashi wars. I'm not doing that. I know it's coming if they bounce back. You know, we wouldn't have these guys. We wouldn't be here if Dorsey didn't draft these guys or sign these guys or trade for these guys. I ain't doing it. So I'm just laying it out there now. the thing with the front office now, Jack, is we want to know who's leading the coaching search. Obviously, Jimmy and Dee Haslam, the owners, are at the top of the organization. But the longest tenured guy in that front office is John DePodesta. And it has seemed, Jack, that his role has certainly increased with the organization. So what's your opinion on Depo taking control of this coaching search, it seems, and being the one who may be the driving force of the guy who they end up hiring?
Well, according to Mary Kay Cabot, she tweeted out earlier today, she said that the Browns ownership is leading the coaching search, but DePodesta is running the process, which tells me that he's laying the groundwork. He's setting up the interviews for the candidates, and essentially he's probably going to be leading the interviews. But at the end of the day, it's the Haslam's call on who's the head coach. I don't have a problem with that strategy, honestly. I know a lot of people are going to say, well, the Haslams will screw this up anyways, and in a year or two, they're going to be doing the same thing. That might be true. And, you know, we can have probably a whole episode talking about the Haslams' ownership and where they've gone wrong. But I have no problem with DePodesta running the process. I mean, if the reports are true, the last two coaches that he wanted are looking to be pretty good choices right now. I mean, Sean McDermott has helped turn around the Buffalo Bills. They're going to the playoffs for the second time in three seasons. And then Stefanski, who is a candidate once again for the head coaching job, his first full year as offensive coordinator. Granted, the Vikings have a lot of talent. They had the fourth best offense in the league. So, and then with all the other traits that Stefanski has in terms of leadership, holding players accountable, and obviously what the analytics say, Stefanski looks like he could be a great head coach one day. Obviously, once he gets that opportunity, we'll truly see. But DePodesta is a smart guy. He's learned football during his last 3 or 4 years working with the Browns. It's not like he's taking over the football operations. Everybody has said he's not running the football operations department. What I think he's going to do, I think he's going to oversee the operations, and hopefully this gets to a point where the Haslams kind of can take a step back and trust DePodesta if he's going to take the, if he's going to be around and he's going to commit more to the Browns, that he's going to oversee everything and he's going to put the people in the right place where you don't have to worry about infighting or, you know, you have the analytics side and the football side bump clashing. I think they're trying to get everybody on the same page, and I think that's the proper way to do it.
Yeah, you know, there's going to be a lot made of, you know, he's a baseball guy. He's a baseball guy, you know, picking the next head coach or putting his input on who the next head coach should be. You know, if you're able to evaluate people in the hiring process in a fair way, that's going to translate across any kind of medium, whether, you know, if it's in a grocery store, whether if it's in a front office, whether if it's in a big time company. You know, if you're able to evaluate people and see their true qualifications and what these people are really about, that's what matters most. And if he's able to do that in his role, I don't really have much of a problem with him being heavily involved in this. Now, where I would have a problem, and I know it's been stated otherwise, but, you know, if he does get into the football operations, if he's the one that starts drafting, if he's the one starting to do things that he only has a few years experience doing on the football side, that's where I'm going to start to have a problem. So hopefully they're able to get to a point where, you know, whatever head coach they have, whatever GM they decide to put in place, let those guys do what they need to do in terms of evaluating football players and prospects and people on their team. Let DePodesta continue to do what he's been doing and provide additional resources in terms of analytics and all that kind of stuff. While Dorsey is gone from the organization, Jack, there are still two others in the front office that are still there and Elliott Wolf and Alonzo Highsmith. I know it's very heavily talked about that Highsmith is going to be going to the University of Miami and some kind of football role there. And then it seems as if that Wolf will be remaining in some capacity with the organization, whether it's general manager, whether it's in his current role right now. But are you okay with Depot being in his spot and then Elliott Wolf kind of being the one that takes over the football operations guy, depending on which head coach they bring in?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want Depot Podesta scouting players or picking players. I think his best role would be like a team president, where he oversees the operation, the football operations, and hires the people and puts them in their roles. As it pertains to Highsmith and Wolf, like, I mean, it's clear that Highsmith's not going to be around. There was a report, yes, on Tuesday that he was also getting fired, but he's still in place for now. But, you know, there are the rumors he's going to Miami. Those aren't official yet, but I could see him moving on in some capacity. I do find it interesting that Wolf might stick around in some capacity. I think there was a new report sometime today that he might stay right in his current role as assistant GM if he chooses to do so. And obviously, if the new GM or head coach wants him around, I think Wolf's smart. He's bright. I mean, he's on track to be a future GM at some point. It's amazing he's not already, given his history and his background, but he's obviously a vital part of the front office. Would love to see him stick around in some role, but obviously with the new coach, with the new GM coming in, they're going to have that say. So, you, like I said, you don't want to mix philosophies. I don't know where his stance is on analytics, but like I said, I would love to keep him around, but obviously we don't know his future just yet.
Yeah, I was a big proponent of, you know, after the season, and we've talked about this at least a year ago, big proponent of him stepping up to the GM role and, you know, the having Dorsey move up and kind of overseeing everything that Wolf was doing. Obviously, Dorsey isn't here now, but, you know, if Wolf is able to step into that general manager role and be a good evaluator and take care of everything on the football side, perfectly okay with that. But if they don't decide to promote him and let him stick around, Jack, who are some guys that could be the general manager of the Browns based on the different head coaching candidates that they're looking at?
Well, if they do hire Mike McCarthy, I think logically you would think maybe because of their past relationship that Elliott Wolf would be the perfect candidate for GM. But like I said, we don't know his stance on analytics. We obviously know McCarthy has incorporated them into his coaching during his year off based on, you know, reports and features that have been on NFL Network. So Wolf makes sense there if they can coexist and if Wolf uses analytics as well. If they go the Kevin Stefanski route, and this has already been reported by numerous people, Andrew Berry, the current VP of football operations for the Philadelphia Eagles, there could be a potential relationship there. Obviously, the Haslams love Berry from his time here in Cleveland. He only left the team 11 months ago to go to Philly. So that could make sense. And then if they go the New England route, which is Josh McDaniels, Dave Ziegler, who is in the front office in New England currently, as well as Nick Caserio, who was once rumored to be the Texans GM, but it looks like that's not going to happen. And also Scott Pioli, who was once in the Cleveland front office. He was in the New England front office at a time, and he was also the Kansas City GM. So McDaniels obviously has a lot of ties to front office executives from his nearly 20 years with the New England Patriots. So he could get anybody in that role, just a matter of who he works well with. But I feel like those are the three coaches, Stefanski, McDaniels, and McCarthy, and then obviously all the candidates that match up with them, which has been widely speculated already as all potential fits under Dee Podesta and under the new current the new structuring of the Browns organization.
McCarthy is scheduled to interview with the Browns tomorrow, which is Thursday, if you're listening to this a couple days later. But he is scheduled to interview with the Browns on Thursday. An interesting name that popped up is the 49ers defensive coordinator. I'm going to butcher the last name, but Robert Saleh. Hopefully that's correct. His interview is this weekend. Greg Roman and Eric Bieniemy are potentially interviewing this weekend as well. Jack, out of those three names, I know they're not, McCarthy, McDaniels, and Stefanski, but out of those three names, which one of those coaching candidates intrigues you the most?
I actually think Robert Saleh seems to be the name that a lot of people wouldn't think would be the name that would interest the most, because, I mean, you look at what Greg Roman's done in Baltimore and pretty much anywhere he's been, whether it's Buffalo or San Francisco, he's developed a strong offense through the running game, which has helped fit the quarterback well. And then obviously Bieniemy has had success in Kansas City, but we all know that we don't know his exact role, because essentially Andy Reid is the offensive coordinator there as well. He just doesn't hold the title. Bieniemy does. But Saleh does. I mean, this guy has pretty much risen up the coaching ranks just in this year alone. I think, and I could be wrong, and hopefully somebody will correct me, but I think there was reports that he was going to get fired last year. And Shanahan stuck by him, and now this 49ers defense has taken off, and it's one of the top ones in the league. Granted, it has tapered off just a little bit down the second half of the season, but, I mean, the talent is there. You've seen him on the sidelines. He's fiery, so, and he's well-respected in that locker room. Makes me think that, you know, the defense believes in him. The players believe in him. Shows that he's a leader. I'm intrigued, and I'm waiting to see how this interview is going to go. And then obviously, you know, we'll hear reports about how it went, but you got to think though, Anthony, Kyle Shanahan was here. Mike LaFleur was here. Mike McDaniel was here for that 2014 season. They witnessed what the Haslams are like. And I'm sure they've told, Robert Saleh what the organization is like with the Haslams at ownership. The dysfunction, the turmoil, the infighting. Maybe Saleh doesn't take the job, but maybe he wows them and he becomes a dark horse for the job. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this interview unfolds.
Yeah, I think he's definitely the dark horse. And, you know, I would rank him fourth behind those three bigger names in terms of guys I would personally want to be the head coach. No. His offensive coordinator, though, is who he would hire for that position, is the biggest key to all this, because he is a defensive guy. Obviously, he would be a great fit to work with Myles Garrett with the work that he's done with Nick Bosa this year for the 49ers. But the offensive hire is what's going to be key if they hire a defensive coach. When they hired Mike Pettine, you know, they hired Shanahan. You know, it worked. It worked pretty well until things got screwed up and people were texting on the sidelines and doing some weird things. But I think that if they're able to hire Saleh and a good mind at the offensive coordinator position, I think that it wouldn't be a terrible hire. It's definitely not a flashy hire. But going into all this, after just getting out of a relationship with Freddie Kitchens as your head coach, do you really want to go into another season with a rookie head coach? And that would fall under Stefanski, Saleh, Roman, Bieniemy, Brian Daboll, who they're also going to interview. That would fall under all those guys, do you really want to go into another season with a rookie head coach?
No, I wouldn't think they'd go that route again, but I also think that they need to do a thorough search. They need to find who is going to be the best coach, the best leader, the man that's going to hold these players accountable, and hopefully they don't have any second thoughts or doubts. That's why I think they are interviewing so many people. Last year they interviewed, I think, was it 7 or 8 guys, but we all kind of knew that it was probably going to be Kitchens. I mean, they did interview some strong candidates. You know, Jim Caldwell was probably the next best choice. And obviously Stefanski got 2 interviews because he was so well-liked by the analytics department. But, I mean, the perception was is we all thought it was going to be Freddie Kitchens' job. And I think the Haslams and DePodesta want to make sure they get this right, because I truly think, you know, despite the perception that the Haslams are just ready to blow it up every year or two because it's not going their way, I think they want to make sure they get the right guy so that they don't have to do this every 2 years. That, you know, they can see this through the whole 4 or 5 years they sign a coach to its contract.
Yeah, they're always going to have this perception until it's not actual reality. You know, until there's a consistent winner on the football field and they are able to have a general manager or head coach 5, 6, 7 years, that perception is always going to be there. So until they're able to change that reality with this organization, unfortunately, that's the public's opinion. The public has the right to have that opinion because it's the truth. So hopefully, you know, we said this last year, we said it a few years before that, and you know, it's like every other year. Hopefully they get it right this time. You know, I don't know how hopeful we all are because we've gone through this so much. At some point, the hope will probably die, but you would think that with the talent that is on this roster, it's very intriguing to a head coach. It's probably the best job, maybe second best job behind the Cowboys, with the talent that they have over on that team. But you know, there's definitely talent here, and until they get it right, obviously they deserve any kind of criticism, and it is certainly well deserved.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at it. Since they've taken the team over in 2012, I think they're heading towards their sixth head coach, and I want to say their 5th or 6th general manager. I mean, the Haslams deserve as much criticism as they've got over the last 24, 48, however many hours it's been since they even fired Freddie. I mean, it was the right move to fire Freddie, and I think at the end of the day, it'll be the right move to part ways with Dorsey, but it's just the perception, which is fair, is that they meddle and they blow it up too quickly. I mean, they gave Hugh Jackson 2.5 seasons when it didn't work. But like I said, they need to quit mixing philosophies too. And according to reports, I think it was Charles Robinson, Haslam's finally seeing that mixing the philosophies doesn't work. You can mix them, but everybody has to be on the same page. And I think if they could let DePodesta run this search and get everybody on the same page, I don't think we'll see infighting. I don't think we'll see turmoil. But the Haslams also need to be patient too, because say they go 7 or 9 or 8 and 8 next year with the talent that we currently have, plus we add some more this offseason, they can't blow it up. They got to let it play out. They got to let the coach install his plan, his direction, and the same with the GM. They can't just get mad and blow things up unless it's completely necessary.
You're exactly right. That's what they need to do. Hopefully they're able to pick the right guy, get him in here, turn this thing around, fix all the problems that they had going to next season, win more football games than he did this year, make the playoffs, and hopefully we can forget about all of this and actually enjoy some playoff football, which, Jack, let's be honest, I don't really remember the last time they made the playoffs. You know, I don't remember that atmosphere. I don't remember what it was like. I remember watching the game, but I don't remember, you know, what the atmosphere in Cleveland was like, you know, being in the playoffs, especially playing the Steelers. I want to feel that again. I want to experience what that's like. And I've heard a lot of stories of those kinds of experiences, and I want to be able to feel what real playoff football is like in this town. And at some point, I would hope, beginning next year, we're able to enjoy that for a consistent length of time. And I just pray that they get it right. Is there anything else you want to discuss before we get on out of here?
No, we are good to go.
All right. On tomorrow's episode, we're going to be back again tomorrow. We are going to have Mark Schofield, who is a big-time Patriots podcaster. He's been on with us before. He's going to come on and talk Josh McDaniels. We're going to talk Wild Card Weekend because his Patriots are once again in the playoffs for however many consecutive years. So we'll discuss the playoffs. We'll discuss Josh McDaniels. We'll discuss other coaching opportunities, probably potential GMs with him as well. So we'll be back tomorrow. As always, you can follow Jack on Twitter, at JamieCurryCLE. Follow me on Twitter, at Anthony Ojoki, J-O-K-I. Follow the podcast and the website, at The Dogland. Find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio. With all that, most importantly, as we get on out of here, go Browns.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.